From davidrenicky.com, it's the man himself. Hello, sir.
Only too happy to be with you again, Bill Kerr.
Thank you so much. Guinness Book World attempt tomorrow night that should get everyone's heart fluttering. Everyone who's never stepped outside and looked at the night sky, well, tomorrow's your chance, and you can, you know, feel you're in touch with your brothers and sisters, because a fair number of people will be doing this, David.
Yeah, there will be a lot. Grab your telescope, Bill Kerr. Throw it on the back seat tomorrow night and head out to anyone who is putting this. Well, this is an initiative that really is, I like these sort of things, being put on by the ABC. And it's called Stargazing Live. It's going to be televised. And what they're trying to do here in one go is to try and break the Guinness World Record for the greatest number of people in one country staring at the same thing at the same time.
We dabbled into it last year, I recall.
Yeah, we did. Now, this is this has been pushed by Brian Cox and Julia Zamira from ABC. And it's an initiative to get people to be aware of what's in our night sky, because we've got the best guys in the world. I think it's important that they do that. It's taking place tomorrow night, I think around 8 or 8.30, but there are preliminaries leading up to it. I think you'll find most observatories in the town you're in, or if you've got an astronomy club somewhere, they will be holding an event for sure.
We've got a guy called Owen Benedict who does the Whopper Falls Observatory just in the hinterland from the Sunshine Coast, and
I'm sure they'd be. I'd get in touch with them. You've got to register online, abc.net.au/stargazing, or just Google Stargazing ABC or whatever. But look, the Guinness World Record was set in 2015 by the Australian National University in Canberra, and that was 7,960 folk from 37 locations. They want to get 30,000 people across multiple sites tomorrow night, and they'll be looking through a telescope for only about 10 minutes. And if they break the record, good. Look, it's just a bit of fun. You know, there's no prize in it for anybody. It's just a partnership between the ANU, the National University, and the ABC, and trying to get Australians there. If they haven't been out and looked through a telescope before, this is the time to go and do it.
See, for a lot of people, this will probably be the first time they've looked through a telescope or even been in their own backyard or to the nearest dark park to check the wonder of the night sky.
Yeah, I continually get people say they've never seen anything through the telescope. They've never had it. Most people don't go near observatories. You don't. It's just not something that's there all the time.
Yeah.
Unless you've got one and know what to poke the thing at, it serves no purpose. Now, we see this all the time. You know, I have people coming up to me saying, "Wow, I've never seen the moon like that before." Well, I'm wondering what that statement means. What were they looking through, a pair of binoculars or something, once before? So you've got Jupiter up. It's brilliant at the moment. And you can see there's bands in the clouds. You can see the moon's around the outside. People don't realise that. It's a giant red spot there. And Saturn's rings are prominent. You can see them fairly clearly. There's just so much. There's a jewel box in the Southern Cross. We're doing a sky tour. I've been asked by Charles Sturt University here in my town to put on a night. We've got our group going out with our telescope. So I think the time is now. If you haven't done it before, just give it a shot. Give the kids and find somewhere, a venue around near you in your town. And one you just mentioned would be the place to go to, Whopper.
Whopper Falls, yeah.
Yeah, and go and just have a good night out. It doesn't cost you anything. Well, it shouldn't anyway.
How funny is this, David? My brother continually believes that we did not go to the moon because through a telescope he says he can't see the spacecraft or the footprints or the flags they planted on the moon's surface. That's his argument.
Yeah, good. Good logic, that one. Yeah, well, I can't see London from here with my telescope, so it doesn't exist. Nobody must live there.
Very good. Hey, what's this story? Steve Hawking's family inviting time travellers to his memorial service? What?
Yeah, it's a bit of a pun. Look, God knows where this story came from, but Hawking always had a dabbling interest in time travel.
Yes.
Don't we all? We all do. You wish you could jump into something and shoot back to 1955, 75, 80. Don't get involved with that person. Don't go down that road. Don't buy that terrible car. I mean, if we could do it, we could. Now, jokingly, they've suggested people should invent it. He once said people should invent a time travel if they want to address questions or complaints to his younger self.
That's great. I love it.
I like that. He's always remained curious about the potential of time travel, although physically it's probably an impossibility. So now that he's gone, the members of the public have been invited to apply for tickets to attend a celebration of his life at a memorial service in Westminster Abbey. Look, it's happening on June 15. His ashes will be interred alongside the grave of Isaac Newton and Charles Darwin. I think that's terrific. And a public ballot offering tickets for the service has got to be held. There's so much interest in it. Run by the Stephen Hawking Foundation.
I'd love to see you there, David.
I would go in a heartbeat. His ashes will be interred at noon on Friday, June 15, in Westminster Abbey. I think a fitting tribute to a man who gave us so much and was so controversial. But it's hardly surprising that time travellers might well attend Hawking's memorial service. He's put the invitation out anyway, and they've got special seating arranged for anyone who wants to come along from the future.
You can find more information about that at davidrenicky.com, as well as a story about David's biggest hero, Elon Musk. He's promising we should be able to get to any point on the planet within an hour. That would be a coup. That would be a miracle for society, my friend.
Now, listen, this is an interesting story. I mean, you've got to treat this with a certain amount of scepticism, but you've also got to look at it, too, with a certain amount of respect. Because this guy's got a bit of a history behind him of doing things that people said he can't do.
Yeah.
Now, he's building the big BFR, the big rocket he wants. This is his main ambition in life. Everything else before that has gone to just for this moment. This is the BFR. He calls it the big...
Friendly rocket.
Yeah. I call it the big flipping rocket. he calls it something. But what he wants to do, he wants to have and use it for air travel. In other words, to put passengers in it at a location somewhere, maybe it'd be offshore.
A suborbital type craft.
Sorry?
A suborbital type craft.
Yeah, a suborbital vehicle. And he wants to put up to 100 people in there.
Yeah, okay.
And he wants to travel between major cities in anywhere around the world in 40 minutes. Now, can you imagine getting into or turning up at Brisbane Airport at 9 o'clock in the morning and you get a phone call and your wife's waiting for you in London? And what do you want? What do you want for lunch, love? and you say, well, I wouldn't mind a steak. She says, I'll put it on now. Should be a little bit on the cool side by the time you arrive. Can you imagine getting into a vehicle like this, along with a group of other people, taking off on a suborbital flight? Yes, it's going to be a bit of a rush job, and you're going to be moving very quickly, and you land at Heathrow Airport within an hour.
But it would revolutionise our life. We have people who now prefer to live in the country rather than live in the city and do their business from there. Imagine if you happen to, you wanted to live in London, but you've got to work, say, in Australia, and every night you could go home.
You couldn't believe that you could do such a thing. I mean, there was a time when I remember growing up when if a man lived in the outer suburbs of a major city like Brisbane, Sydney, or whatever, and we were 20 or 30 miles out, and my dad used to spend an hour and a half just on a train going to work.
Yeah.
He had to, but can you imagine people from Gosford? It was unheard of. Gosford's another, half an hour away. You just couldn't see yourself doing it. The trip was just too long. But here we are saying that you can actually have your workplace in London and leave home at 9 o'clock and be there by 10. I mean, you've got a bit of travel. He said the longest part of the journey is the travel to the barge from the shore. Once you get on the boat to go over to the barge. Look, who knows? People in the past have been laughed at because they came up with ideas. We need Elon Musk. We need perfect people like him. Look, let's project ahead, say, 100 years from now, and what will people be doing? More than likely, this type of thing will be commonplace, maybe not in a BFR, but something like that, a vehicle that can move from any point on the Earth to another point with under an hour. He's saying already that he wants to be able to convert any 15-hour plane flight into a one-hour rocket flight. This same rocket he's building, the same vehicle, he wants to take a group of people to Mars to populate Mars.
Well, get this, David. If you go on YouTube and type in Land of the Giants, you'll see the sort of craft that did suborbital travel in an Irwin Allen TV series in the mid to late 60s.
Okay.
Land of the Giants. And the craft's called the Spindrift.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Interesting. Well, anyway, look, he's got other ideas. Can you imagine if some of the plans that he's got come off, or people like him come along? His Hyperloop, for instance, these tubes, these connected vacuum tubes between major towns or major cities, from Brisbane to Sydney in 15 minutes, from somewhere like Perth to Sydney in an hour. These type of things will probably be commonplace in a future time. Technologically, they're a little bit beyond us at the moment, but it's only a mechanical thing. We can build things. When we get the technology to build different types of materials, and we're doing that now, we're making stuff with things called nanotechnology. These are steels that are 10 times stronger than the stuff we've got today. We're developing systems now to power vehicles we've never had before. It won't be too long before, and probably around the year 2050, where we start to dabble in light-speed travel. And this is when we'll get serious and the first expedition will take off for the stars. We could quite conceivably see, by 2050 or a little bit beyond that, a Robinson family, I'm not being silly here, a Robinson-type family in a vehicle off to Alpha Centauri. It's a 10-year return trip. It's not that long.
And that's, David, why I love Lost in Space, because you look at the shots they had on Earth in that series on Netflix, it didn't seem that far in the future from where we are now. Living arrangements were fairly similar. They went to jobs. It was just a government project to move people off the planet. It's just...
Well, when you look at the history of what we've done, consider that it's taken 10,000 years for human beings to go from the invention of the wheel to the Wright brothers, and 66 years only from the Wright brothers to the moon landing.
Yeah.
Now, we're developing computer systems now that'll be completely unbelievable in the future. Quantum computers that have no mechanical internals like we've got today, no more scams, no more pulling a material off somebody else or stealing stuff. All these sort of things are going to change. Our currency will probably end up looking even at a world government down the track somewhere.
Some people might be scared of that.
I don't know. These sort of things could happen in the future, but all I'm concerned about, and all that I know about and what I write about and talk about, is the future of us in space. Yeah. I mean, this is the future. This is where we're going to go. And we know that there's mineralogy up there. There's mining. Space mining will be commonplace. People will be living and working on bases on the moon and Mars. They'll be traveling backwards and forwards as regularly as we travel overseas today. And to those people, it'll be quite normal. It won't be way out. It won't be science fiction. It'll be science fact. It's happening for them. These sort of things is what Elon Musk is into. And he's only a loner, but there are a couple around near him that have got the same types of ideas. I think once he gets going, and if he does make a success of what he's saying he's going to do, you're going to see a flurry of other people follow him. And this technology that he's putting together now, and this flight capability, will just expand at an extremely high rate, I reckon.
Yeah, one day, Elon Musk...
Would you get on a BFR?
I would.
Would
a big, a big freaking rocket, I would.
It'd be quite a trip, wouldn't it?
But Elon Musk, his name will be revered as much as Einstein, Galileo.
And the Wright brothers.
Copernicus, yeah.
He could have been Orville Wright in another time, or Alexander Graham Bell. But there are other people like him that are sitting in the back just waiting for their opportunity to move forward. It's going to be an interesting world out there. I just wish I could live long enough to... when we invent a time machine, we'll take a trip and we'll come. But look, it's good. It's good just to play around with some ideas and talk about it. None of us will probably live to see any of it come to fruition. But just go back and think. We talk about the old Dick Tracy watch and that. I've just got one of those things called a Fitbit.
This is I haven't.
I got it yesterday. The damn thing is reminding me when I'm going to have dinner. It's got a relaxation time in there. You can sit. It'll tell me how far I've walked, how fat I'm getting. Goodness me, where does it all finish, you know?
You know, you say you won't be around to see some of the big events to come in the world. I think you'll be around to see a human set foot on Mars.
I want that, yes.
Yes.
I refuse to die before that time, yeah.
And what's this they're saying, that the first person should be a woman?
I don't see any problem with this story. A lot of people think, why did you put that up there? Well, look, it was a BBC program, an interview that I caught with Alison McIntyre. She's in the Johnson Space Center in Houston, and she's saying that only 12 people have walked on the moon. They were all men. Women trained in the space program, as we talked to you about a few weeks ago, and were forgotten, put aside. She says 40 years now since NASA selected their first female astronaut. She's saying that when we finally do go to Mars and the first crew arrive there, she's saying, I'd like it to be a woman's footprint on the red planet. Can't see any problem with that. It doesn't worry me one iota, as long as somebody does it, and does it fairly soon. But she's a staunch advocate for it. And you'll see there's a movement around the world now for women to have equal rights. You can see it happening. Look at the movie industry, what's happened there.
Yeah.
And there are now calls in NASA to open it up even further. They're no longer bloke, it's no longer a blokey thing. They're fairly gender friendly at the moment. But there's room for more. And as I say, you know, women do need to take more of a role in the future of space travel. We're doing okay at the moment, but I think there's a little bit more. Well, whoever does stand or walk on the red planet will of course, you know, achieve the same sort of status as Neil Armstrong has.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And always will have, yeah. You know.
More at davidrenicky.com. Actually, while you're clicking on that part of the website, have a look at how to choose a telescope. It's quite a good little a beginner's guide into what you need to get started to looking at the heavens. And maybe if you want to add GPS to your telescope, he's got a little thing called Store GPS. Was it Star GPS? I love it.
Oh, look, Star Chart. Go and get it. This is the app we tell everyone to download. Starchart. It's a little, it's a blue square with a white picture of Saturn in the middle. Star Chart is an excellent app. It'll show you what's in the sky. Do you know what? It's the most accurate app I've used. You can hold it up, and the object you're looking at on the screen is going to be close to be dead set in front of you.
Wow. Okay, check it out.
I highly recommend that one, yeah.
All right, David, catch you next week, mate.